much about. You gotta put it in perspective.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
I talk first. I always talk first. Well, technically, you just talked first, but. God damn it. Now this entire conversation has been derailed. So, congratulations for that.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Jewish comics and kid Jews. Hispanic comics. George Lopez kids Hispanics all the time. Gay comics. Kid the gay situation. It's okay, isn't it? But not okay when the non-N person uses it.
And it's time for your daily dose of cool.
And now.
What are these, Kevin? They look like clown panties. Why are there clown panties crumpled up in our hallway? They look like they belong to a clown. A slut whore clown.
Our feature presentation.
And now, a moment with Bean.
He's a great ancillary.
Right, what
he's a great ancillary character.
That was a moment with Bean.
Just trying to diffuse the spotlight on your clown panties.
Yep.
And why you have those.
That I am doing.
Why do you have those whore clown panties?
Kevin.
Sicko.
Explaining to do.
I just don't know, man.
No, we know.
You don't know.
We just want you to face it. It's time for you to admit.
Is this an intervention?
Yes, it is.
For whore clown panties?
Good yes, man, by the way. As a matter of fact.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Tuesday, the 10th of May.
Allie, are you going to ask Mark Hamill a question in his little Q&A Twitter chat he's doing?
Oh, I already did. I ask all celebrities the same question because it makes Chip and I chuckle.
Okay.
Because they usually respond, and it's the dumbest question.
Okay. All celebrities. Doesn't matter what they do.
Yeah, whenever a celebrity has a Q&A.
Okay.
Like David Duchovny was the last one,
and
he responded so graciously. But I always ask, do you think it's weird that Tarzan doesn't have a beard? I mean, where is he shaving? And usually they always are like, that's a great question. I never thought about that. And then I think, oh, you took time out of your Q&A.
For this dumb thing.
Yeah.
So Mark Hamill, you already asked it?
Yeah, I asked him on Twitter.
All right, okay.
Nothing yet. I'll keep you guys
posted.
Okay,
good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Because God forbid he would spend his time talking about Star Wars.
Listen,
he's talked about Star Wars his whole life.
It's like, ugh.
Let's
been
talk
so
Tarzan.
Bored up here on this cliffside waiting for my
You think he's still there?
Lightsaber. I hope not.
He lives there. All right. We'll definitely get back to us on that. I have a story to get you started. Allie, do you watch I won't ask Kevin because I know he does, but Allie, do you watch a lot of Japanese porn?
I don't. I kind of watch across the board porn.
Okay.
No real genre.
Well, you may or may not know that Japanese porn, it's against the law in Japan to show genitals. So they do allow you to make sexually explicit movies in Japan, but they pixelate the genitals. You're not allowed to see penises. You're not allowed to see vaginas.
Did you say Japanese?
Japanese, yes.
I thought theirs was always crazier. Game shows are crazy.
Game shows.
Everything that they do seems to be
game shows are
more
crazy
extreme.
Because they make you put your face in mashed potatoes, but they don't let you show your penis.
Wow.
So yet they pixelate genitals.
That video game where they that TV game where they make you put your face in potatoes.
It's a great
That's
example.
The kind of thing they do.
Right.
You've seen how crazy those Japanese game shows are.
Yes.
All right. So anyway, so that's the thing. So look, there are lots of different obscenity laws around the world. And, you know, there are people in America who think it's ridiculous that a woman can't show a nipple, for instance. And in many people's minds, that's not obscene. So every country and every person has a different line of what they consider obscene. Okay, so that's Japan's thing.
All right.
So there's been a case that has been going on for some time that has been watched with interest around the world, not just in Japan, of an artist whose name is Megumi Igarashi. And she created a kayak shaped like her vagina back in 2014, and she was arrested for it and put in jail, and she was soon released because she became a little bit of a celebrity in Japan, and tens of thousands of people wrote a petition, and they made the government, or they insisted the government release her, which they did. Okay, so she was released for that. Well, she was rearrested because she started selling models of her vagina, as many people do in this country, by the way. She did 3D printable models of her vagina, And she got arrested again. And her trial just concluded yesterday. She finally was tried, and the trial was going on for yesterday. And her whole thing is, look, the vagina has been a taboo in Japanese society forever, but it shouldn't be. It's just part of a woman's body. You know, there's nothing obscene about my vagina. There's nothing obscene about everybody's vagina. What's going on here? So she is taking this as essentially as a free speech issue. And they tried her on that, and she was convicted.
What?
But they're not sending her to jail. They're just fining her. They're just fining her because they're – and they – by the way, she's created this – and this was her intention, by the way. She's trying to challenge these laws in Japan. Mm-hmm. And she's created this waterfall of other arrests for people who sell the vagina 3D printable models that she makes. So they've been arresting gallery owners and people like that. They've been arresting people who have put her displays in museums. I mean, it is really like she's turning the thing upside down, which is what she's trying to do.
But she's changing policy in a country with her vagina.
Yes.
Like we do.
Right?
She really is. I mean, if somebody makes a pin or a picture on the wall that's a plastic model of a vagina, does that seem obscene to you guys? Does that seem like the type of thing somebody should be arrested for and go to jail for?
It depends on the vagina very much.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
She's 42. Does that make a difference for you, Evan?
Oh, don't ask that.
I feel like it would. Well, I mean, it's not ideal.
Oh, you're awful.
I mean, is it art?
That's the question.
Right? Because I think probably 35
your
plus.
Your face right now is awful. I wish we had a camera on
the
it.
The only face I have.
Is it art? Is it pornography? What is if a, look, this isn't somebody upskirt photoing her and disseminating it out there against her wishes. This is an artist who says, look, I'm proud of my vagina. I think my vagina is beautiful. I think my vagina should not be hidden. I want to share my vagina. And the government coming down on that? We need more women like her, don't we? I think.
That's on.
Right? Yeah. I don't know, Allie. What do you think about this? You're coming at it from a different perspective than we are.
It's a vagina. Come on.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
I mean, she's not running around the streets where little kids can see her dropping her pants. She's making art.
She was doing that. I'd be good with that.
She's making art out of a model of a vagina. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on in Japan, but I don't like it.
I wasn't aware about those laws with Japanese porn.
I didn't either.
Oh, yeah. That's, pixelated surprising. Porn. Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's pretty much BS.
All right.
It's pretty much BS. So anyway, so after 2 years now, almost 2 years, it finally did come to trial. So it's good to see the legal system works just as fast in Japan as it does in America. And she was convicted. No jail time, just a fine. But I'm sure, it doesn't seem like she's going to give this fight up. I'm sure there'll be plenty more of her vagina to go around for everybody.
That's nice
to
know.
Let's talk about today's Kevin DeBee Show, shall we?
With the glug glug and the sniff sniff and the bloop bloop.
Right? Rob Reiner is coming in studio.
What?
Along with Nick Reiner. Hey. Coming in studio. Mm-hmm. That's weird, right?
Well, he should be better than that.
But that's my point.
Yeah.
Is he officially slumming it now?
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer.
For who?
I mean, for him and for us.
Sure.
Like, I don't want to be the one that everybody points to and goes, Rob was on a great path until that happened. And then it's not good.
I think we'll show Mr. Reiner a good time, and he'll be glad he came.
Do you?
I do. Okay. Look, we're huge fans. We're interested in what he's here to talk about. He's a great, great interview. I think everybody's going to have a good time, and he's not going to regret it.
All right. That's what I want to hear.
Don't shoot us in the foot before it happens, man.
We have actor, writer, director, comedian Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. On the program today. He directed tonight's episode of The Flash.
Now, is he slumming it by coming on with us?
No, I think he's a member of the family.
Okay.
So as much as he wants to get away, he can't.
Right. I think he still has to come over for dinner every once in a while.
Dominic Rodriguez is going to be on the program today talking about his movie about furries.
Yay! Kids love furries.
The kids really love it.
I said that for years.
Who doesn't?
Right. Who doesn't?
Right.
Plus, we have your tickets for the K-Rock Weenie Roast in the front row.
So good.
In the 7 o'clock hour this morning, and just after 6, in about a half hour, we have a brand new edition of...
Thanks for that info, Bean!
Come on.
Ralph is next with the Showbiz Beat.
Hard to believe that Weenie Roast is Saturday, by the way.
I know. Can't
wait. Crept up on us this year. Knew what the date was. Knew it was May 14th. Knew May 14th was coming. Still surprised it's this weekend.
Hmm. Hmm.
For a guy who... Gonna buy him a calendar.
Yeah.
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 So you look on the wall and say, oh, this many days till my birthday, Daddy.
That's what I need to do is count down. Exactly.
Like I do for a child.
I understand that you can't help me with that. It's my problem. I get that. Mm-hmm. But just saying I'm surprised. All right. Ralph is here. Time for our first look at the Showbiz Beat for Tuesday at 5:54. What's new?
All is well. Remain calm. All is well.
That's good news.
Okay.
A lot of people were worried about Ozzy Osbourne because, you know, he and Sharon apparently on the outs right now. Who knows whether it's forever or not. This has happened before. The two of them have sort of gone separate ways and worked hard and got things patched up and got back together again. But people were concerned because of the split, which was reportedly caused by Ozzy entertaining a new lady. Mm-hmm. Caused the split, and they said, well, if Ozzy and Sharon separate, Ozzy's going to just go off the rails. Or on the rails. You know what I'm saying, right? Kevin, you're with me, huh, buddy?
Yes.
Let's go do some blow.
He's doing lines of cocaine.
Exactly.
Is what
That's
you're saying,
my point.
Allegedly.
But it's not the case, and Ozzy is not missing, even though he is, as his representatives say, not in the marital home. He is apparently fine as Ozzy can be. New York Post found him yesterday carrying his dog. They need to be walked, Ozzy. And Ozzy insisted that
Ozzy needs to be walked as well.
He had not gone back to drugs and alcohol. I've been sober for 3.25 years. Any reports that I'm not sober, completely inaccurate, he said. Again, word is Sharon found Ozzy cheating on her with a 45-year-old hairstylist named Michelle Pugh and sent him packing. Sharon also did not show up for work yesterday in her daytime talk show, The Talk. So, see, every dark cloud is a silver lining. Right? She wasn't on The Talk. She's got that going for her.
Right. She's not the worst part of that show, though.
I wouldn't know, Pete.
Yeah, same. I don't watch that.
Here's how I avoid all the bad parts. I don't have to worry about the worst part of The Talk. I can avoid all of the parts of The Talk by doing this. Look, watch. See what I did there?
You looked away.
I looked away. Yeah.
Wow.
I did.
Interesting.
I'm going to patent that. I think it's going to come in handy for people in the future. We're getting details about the Garbage Tour this summer. Shirley Manson and the guys hit the road on July 6th in Milwaukee, as the natives would say.
I think they just call it Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
I don't...
Milwaukee.
Yeah, even when you do that with your hand, it's still...
The Native American pronunciation.
Is it?
Because the Milwaukee Indians...
Really?
Of course, are from that region.
Hmm.
Milwaukee.
I'm going to keep saying Milwaukee, if that's all right with you.
Fine. If you want people to laugh at you.
I'm okay with that, obviously.
All right. If you want our Native American brothers to point and raise their tomahawks in anger.
I don't think they
that's all
carry
on
tomahawks.
You. Oh, open up a blog.
Okay.
And they will wrap up their tour at the Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C. on August 3rd. So just a little jaunt around the United States this summer.
It's a good band.
But they're also doing a big outdoor gig at New York City's Central Park, which would be cool to see.
They're playing the Weenie Roast. When's that, you guys?
It's Saturday.
That surprises me. I can't believe
this Saturday? It's snuck up on us.
Milwaukee.
Nope.
No.
I don't know, man.
I feel like I do.
I'm 3/4 Choctaw.
I don't think you're any quarter Choctaw.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Odette Annabelle, whatever. She's hot. Look her up. 31 years old today. Ryan Getzlaff, Chip. Ryan Getzlaff's birthday today.
Whack.
Is that duck. So he doesn't... Are you
common.
A regular Duck fan? Will you watch all the time him?
I do. That's the OG, right? That's the OG that's right there.
That might have been the first ever moment with
That's the face that launched 1,000 ships right there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-uh. It certainly wasn't the first moment with it. It was the first time we said... We should probably start keeping track
right.
of these.
Yeah, I've been doing moments with since I started talking.
Yeah,
we started cataloging
the first one
them.
That was, the first one we encased in amber and put on display.
This has to be a very sad birthday for Mr. Getzlaff, I would imagine, right? Like, he wants to be playing hockey right now.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Every NHL player who's not playing wants to be busy right now. Keenan Thompson of SNL is 38 years old. He's a very subtle performer. I enjoy his work enormously. I'm in a sketch.
He's fantastic.
He's
on
a
that
nightmare.
Show.
On
he's
that
fantastic.
A nightmare.
Bean, really?
Yes, he's great.
See, oh, this is why you can't trust him, Alex.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, Bean's barometer is just all over the place.
Wrong.
Yeah. Bean is a compass surrounded by magnets. And it's just, and that thing that just spins. The arrow just spins, and you never know where north is because it's just broken.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's very funny.
He's
wrong.
Awful.
I think he's the longest running cast member right now.
Wrong. It's stunning that he continues to get work.
Because he's so good.
Because he's so wrong. Awful. Even the slightest character, if he has to play a waiter, he's like, "What can I get you now?
Look,
for your dinner." He's like, "Hey, who?" Because someone hit him with a trank dart. Can he just pretend to be a human being in one sketch?
I'm not saying his skills would translate to acting in other areas and TV
in
and
real
movies.
Life.
Right, in real life. I'm not saying that. But for SNL, he delivers consistently every sketch. He's always good. But when, I don't know if you saw the Bill Cosby movie he made, the Fat Albert movie, not so good.
All right.
Young MC's 49 years old today. Bono, a gentleman named Bono. Or Bono.
Nope.
Of
nope.
course, that's the Native American
no.
tribe say. He is 56 years old. And Chris Berman of ESPN. Boomer, as he's known.
Wow.
Back, 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 back. He Shut could up. Go all the way. 61 years old today. Speaking of sports television, big brouhaha, big upset, big kerfuffle yesterday.
Yeah. Did you talk about that before you came in?
I didn't see any of that.
Mike Tirico leaving the four-letter network and moving to NBC. Hmm. People speculating perhaps he's going to take over for Sunday night / Thursday night football. Al Michaels might be getting the old...
Really?
Door, that is not good news for ESPN because he's one of the only people I enjoy. But Tirico's the great script, news for ESPN... Chris Carter and what's his name?
Ray Lewis.
The Stabber. Yeah, Ray Lewis.
The Stabber.
Fired.
Whose job was it to tell Ray Lewis, by the way, that he was being fired?
I hope it was via email.
I sent him a telegram. A singing telegram. The telegram was. You're fired. The guy just ran.
Oh, good stuff.
Milwaukee.
Nope. Nope.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
Oh, yeah.
Bean talks to us a lot, and you're lucky you don't hear it. Because you listen to commercials, you listen to music. You're so lucky you don't hear it.
In other words, I am a personable coworker.
Did I say talks to? I think I said talks to us a
right,
lot.
Right, exactly.
Not with us,
nope.
though. Zero with us, but a lot of to us.
Well, okay. It sounds to me like I'm volleying the ball and you don't know how to hit it back. Sounds like the problem may be on your end then if the conversation isn't catching on.
You're volleying a brick. That's the problem. If you were volleying the ball, we would play the game, but we don't like bricks being thrown at us.
All right, what are you talking about? What's the problem today?
I think I'm going to go with top five now. I'm going to go with top five for the week because
you're
otherwise...
You're going to cut it down to five?
We're here all day.
Yeah.
So we don't have time for that.
I have all day, by the way. In case you were curious, I'm ready.
So number five. Hey, Dave. Dave must have been in the studio, of course.
See, this is a targeted attack.
He targets the stuff that he knows.
This is a smart bomb.
Maybe you'll have a little interest in, and you're the only one in the room, probably. Hey, Dave, I do not approve of Taylor Swift's hair on the cover of Vogue. Dave says nothing. Bean pauses and then goes, I love her.
Okay.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
But in this
Thanks
case...
Thanks for that info, Bean. Thanks for that info, Bean.
Am I targeting my remarks
we
to the appropriate
don't
personnel?
We need further
Dave and
explanation.
Dave and I
email him.
Are right. Taylor Swift
Call
fans,
him.
As you know. We've
Call
been to see her in concert
email.
Together.
You're on instant message with
Singing
him.
Singing telegram.
Singing telegram.
But what's
Text.
Wrong with... He's in the studio. What's wrong with taking 15 seconds to have a conversation about something that's relevant to a coworker?
I wrote down verbatim that he said nothing.
So wow, even
so you
that
missed,
judgment was
you
off.
You missed him.
That's on Dave, then.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
And where is your approval of her hairstyle on a magazine cover? How does that even factor in to anyone's thought process ever?
Because we always talk about how she looks and what her new outfits are like and whatnot.
But your approval. I do not approve.
I don't approve. I don't like it. I don't
what,
like it.
What
doesn't look good.
Who gives an F?
By the way, Bean's coming down hard on his girl, Taylor Swift. I'll tell you that.
That new
Hold?
Bleach blonde for the summer is all not right. happening. It's not happening at all.
But good. So, this is a different one than even than the one he just gave us. There's another one. Number four. Taylor Swift's dress at the Met Gala was seriously ugly.
Now, you have to understand that we weren't talking about the Met Gala. We weren't talking about her dress.
Of course not.
None of that was going on. These things just come out of the blue. Yeah.
She showed up looking like she was in a Terminator movie or something. And I know that the theme this year was the future.
Don't care.
We don't care.
Not a good look.
Zero people care.
Well, I thought Dave might.
He didn't. That's two that he didn't care about. Bean. Are you listening?
Again,
he's obviously not listening. The takeaway from today should be, damn, I missed. Come on.
Or, Dave, don't leave a brother hanging.
No, it's not the other people. It's you.
Tomorrow is Queen Elizabeth's birthday. Now, I'll tell you for a fact, he knows that I hate Queen Elizabeth.
Right.
Well, it's
right.
stupid you're beyond words.
You're wrong.
I may be wrong, but you know that's my opinion. So why would you bring that up?
Because it's just a miracle that
tomorrow that woman is Queen Elizabeth's birthday.
Is still alive.
No one said anyone.
It's a miracle.
Right.
What would you get her?
Nothing.
For her birthday, I mean.
As opposed to just a general gift?
He's trying to clarify because he wasn't getting any answer. Because,
you know, we shop for her so often, but this has to be special.
I'm sure she has a list somewhere.
But
a wish list.
People in her life who have to go, what do I get?
More about
you know who
this?
Are not people who have to think about
Correct.
That? Us people. We don't ever have to think about that. So don't bring that up.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
I'm going to have to go over five. I'm sorry. I have too many.
Okay.
I can't do just five.
You got to do your job.
I was just reading about the 100-year-old woman who ran the 100-yard dash. That was said.
She set a record.
Info
we don't need your participation
she
in this.
She set a record
we
for her age
We don't need
group.
Further.
No. This is important. Why don't you give away the next line of it?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. I thought you were done.
Holy crap.
Wait a minute.
I thought
Bean
you were done.
Steps on your joke?
On
I find that hard to
On his it. Own joke.
There's no joke.
I was just reading about the 100-year-old woman who ran the 100-yard dash. Nothing. She's the fastest ever in her category. I want to be 100.
Okay,
that's
so.
Info
the fact that she set a
that's
world
info
record
beam.
For her age
that's
group.
That info
is
that's
worth
that
acknowledging.
Info beam.
You're missing the entire point of this bit. These are things that are not conversation starters for us. These are swings and misses.
They're not. They have no resemblance to a conversation.
Right.
It's the minutiae equivalent of a fortune cookie. You just open it up and you just read it. It just lays there. It's not a conversation.
It's just unrelated to everybody.
It's just there.
Are you guys surprised Woody Allen is still together with Sun Yi?
Unreal.
Nothing. I mean, when you first heard he was dating and he was having sex with his stepdaughter, nothing. I didn't think that would last. Nothing. Nothing. Hold on. Nothing. Yeah, it's on.
Okay.
Thanks for that info, B.
Legitimate question. Did you
guys
Ralph,
know?
Did you think
did
it
you
would last,
know?
Ralph?
Did you guys know that all German nouns are capitalized?
If you can't help it. How can you not respond with that? How can you not say that back to what he said?
Did you guys know that all German nouns are capitalized? No one said anything. That's weird, right? No one said anything. I think that's weird.
It is weird.
Right. We understand that that's your point of view, but don't you...
That's
nothing, Ralph.
Right
that's nothing.
That's that info
beam. Right. We're now way past...
There's the end all be all, ready?
Okay. All right.
This actually happened... And I have to be honest, although I'm minorly interested in it, the rule is you do not give him that satisfaction because then
don't engage.
He... Right.
Right.
So this is what he said. One sentence. I'm watching a video of John Wayne Gacy teaching us to make banana bread.
That's that info beam.
How is that possible? I'm watching a video of John Wayne Gacy.
see, teaching us means part of that community that's watching how to make banana bread.
Oh, I'm pretty happy for Bean's death.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
67-year-old Ozzy Osbourne has a big year ahead in 2016. You know, he's getting ready to go out on his final ever Black Sabbath tour. And it looks like he's going to be doing it without his rock by his side. As Ralph reported earlier in the week, he and Sharon Osbourne apparently have split up after 33 years together. You would think at that point you just hang on to the bitter end, right? You would think?
I would think so. But remember, was it 3 years ago that he had the drug relapse and she kicked him out? But then he cleaned himself up and went back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now the rumor is, and I don't know if it's true or not, that he had sex with his hairdresser.
Well,
she wasn't upset about that. I mean, she was upset about that.
I think it's more likely she was upset. Yes, I think so.
She's uptight.
Super uptight.
Why don't we not speculate and bring our friend Ozzy Osbourne back onto the Kevin and Bean Show? He's always very kind to spend some time with us when we ask. Hey, Ozzy. Ozzy?
Hello.
You there? Ozzy?
Hello.
It's Kevin and Bean. Can you hear us?
Phone. Where is the phone?
Ozzy? Ozzy, it's us.
Hello?
Do you know which end to talk into?
What?
Ozzy?
Hello?
Can you hear us?
Oh, yes. I can hear you.
Okay, it's Kevin and Bean. You remember us?
Sorry, Kevin and Bean are here. Can I take a message?
No. We're Kevin and Bean. We're calling you.
Someone just called for you.
No, that's us.
We're still on the phone.
Oh, well, then just talk to yourselves.
Well, no, we want to talk to you, Ozzy. We're calling to talk to you.
Oh, Ozzy, I'll get him. Ozzy!
No, you're Ozzy. You're Ozzy Osbourne.
I'm a big fan. I can't wait for your final Black Sabbath tour. How's it going?
So, Ozzy, you did tell E! Yesterday that the reports of you not being sober are untrue. You are, what, 3.5 years sober now, no drugs, no alcohol?
Yeah, I haven't touched any alcohol or any drugs.
Right.
I haven't even touched alcohol or drugs.
Right. That's what you said, right, for 3.5 years. So that part is, the sobriety is still working, right?
Yeah, I haven't touched drugs or alcohol in 3.5 years.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Covered that. So what happened?
I haven't even had a drink.
Right.
I haven't taken any of the drugs.
Right. So what can you tell us about what happened with Sharon? Why are you not living in the marital home?
Sharon's not here. Can I take a message?
Right. Sharon is at the house. You're not there. We're trying to find out why, Ozzy.
Sharon!
Nope.
She's not there.
What? Oh, can I leave a message for her?
Ozzy, the report is that she was upset that you were having a relationship with your hairdresser. Is that true?
I have a hairdresser.
Yes.
Right. Are you having sex with her?
No, she's a hairdresser.
Right.
Well, sure.
She just does my hair.
That's
okay,
it,
so there's... it's no truth to the reports that you're having an affair.
Well, she does all my hair.
Oh, okay.
That maybe where we got into trouble.
Yeah.
She was doing her hair on the top of my head.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly she was doing the other hair in other places.
Right.
I think we get it.
Yeah.
Are you
positive she's doing your hair down there?
Yeah, just getting a blowout.
No.
Okay. Yes.
Something like that. Something, and I can't remember the exact term.
Right.
I see where the misunderstanding occurred then.
Sharon!
Sharon's not there. That's why we're calling, to see if you're okay.
So Michelle is the name of my hairdresser.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so she was, you know, doing the hair. And so Sharon's like, oh, you're going to do the hair. And I was like, oh, because the curling iron.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You don't want that anywhere near that.
So I was sitting watching television.
Just now?
Yeah, I was just watching.
I don't know. I don't understand the statement, but it's
Oh, who's that? Oh, she's hot.
Sounds like Sharon.
I'd love to have sex with that woman.
That sounds like your wife.
That's your wife.
I'm going to have to check her out. She's okay. very attractive.
She's the woman that you just split up with this week, Ozzy. You've been married to her for 33 years.
She's just my type.
Right. Yes, she is.
So now I can find this girl on the television.
I mean, you were married to her for 33 years.
You were married to her for 33 years?
No, you were.
You should know how to get in touch with her then.
You know where she lives, Ozzy, the house that you just moved out of.
I'd love to ask her out and see if she'd like to do my hair.
Maybe now is not the right time.
When is... Oh, this show's awful.
You guys are pretty excited. Our show has become pretty flasherific in recent weeks, hasn't it?
It's third week in a row we've had a flash guest.
Love it. Need
first,
to keep it up.
First we had Wells, then we had Zoom.
That's right.
And now we have the director, the villain known as the director.
The director, very serious villain in Star City. Hey, Kevin Smith, what's up, buddy?
You know, I've been called a villainous director many times before, particularly in the Jersey Girl years.
Yeah.
That's when I earned that moniker. How are you guys? I'm feeling good. Tonight's my flash, man.
How about that? We're excited for you as well. You look, you've directed hundreds of hours of movies and TV and lots of things over the years, but you're not a director for hire in general, right? People don't generally call you up and say, hey, come do my thing this week.
No, and they didn't do that in this instance either. I became a big fan of the show. Jason Mewes is always telling me, dude, you got to watch the CW. Jason Mewes lives for the CW.
That's same.
His favorite thing in the world. Guy who plays Jay and my son, Bob. Always trying to show me shows on the CW, and which I call the Shirtless Boy Network, because every time he shows me a show, there's some dude with no shirt on.
Yeah, it's for 14-year-old girls, that network, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, 14-year-old girls and 45-year-old men, because I finally got around to watching Flash, and I fell in love with him. He became my point person. So, like, you know, if there were things I didn't understand, or, like, there was information that was on an episode of Arrow, I'd be like, I don't understand this, and Jason would be texting back, like, oh, you missed that. That was in Starling City in this Arrow episode. And my wife was just making fun of us mercilessly, going, look at you two old ladies and your story.
Your wife was doing the right thing.
Oh, my Lord, what are Nikki and Victor up to? This is the Flash. So, you know, I fell in love with the show. I shot a video of myself watching the season finale. You can see it on my YouTube channel where I start bawling. It's just a really emotional, wonderful show. And I'm not talking about a single Native American looking at trash on the highway tier. I'm talking like I was blubbering with my boobs going up and down, hitting me in the chin. So Jason's wife, Jordan, runs our company. And she called me up and she's just like, I know you're going to hate this, but I know you like that show so much. I called the TV agent, who's also named Jordan, Boy Jordan, Girl Jordan, called Boy Jordan and said, hey, he likes The Flash so much, Kevin. Like, you know, he's been known to direct from time to time and sometimes well. See if they'll let him direct an episode. And so Boy Jordan called up CW, or the Flash production office, rather, and he's like, do you know Kevin Smith? Like, yeah, Dogman. Like, he likes the show. Would you ever let him direct? And they were like, yeah, totally. And that's how it happened. So Jordan calls me up and says, you know, hey, man, I called them and asked them if they'd let you direct. And I was like, why would you do that? And I'm like, that's embarrassing. I don't need no help. I'm doing fine. I don't need no handouts. And she goes, don't worry. They said yes. And I was like, good job. Had a girl thinking outside the box. So because of that, Jason was just like, he's in the background of that call going, I'm going with you because my lady got you a job. And he got on the phone with me, and he was like, I said, dude, I just got the job, so please don't ask me to put you in the show because I don't even know if I have that casting ability.
Do I have that power?
I might not. So he was like, no, I just want to be up there. I just want to see how it happens. I'll be your assistant. And I was like, you are my assistant. Then when I got up there, they gave me the script. They did write him into the show. They wrote a little two-page scene for Jason. And I was kind of like, at one point, they were like, we wrote a piece for Jason. Do you think he'd want to do it? And I was like, do I think he'd want to do it? I'm shocked he hasn't come in here filleting you until you let him do it.
Now do you have to take his shirt off, Kevin?
Yeah, he might have to. Not in this episode. We put a suit on. We put a couple layers on him. He's a middle-aged man.
Now, Kevin. But,
it was heaven, dude. Mewes was so over the moon. I've seen Jason Mewes cry twice in his life. Once, when his daughter was born last year, Logan, incredibly moving picture of him holding the baby and he's weeping. The other time was when I was like, you're going to be on the CW. He just started crying.
Were they equal?
I think, honestly, he got a little more. He squeezed a few more for CW.
All right. Yeah,
sure. At one point, he said, he goes, this is the highlight of my career. And I said, dude, you were once in a movie with your name in the title. Like, that's not the highlight, but he loves the superhero stuff. So I got to go up and direct because of, indirectly because of him, more directly because of his wife. And I had such a blast. I love that show. It's my religion.
Kevin, you've done a lot of directing. Did it scare you a little bit that you might ruin something that you love?
Absolutely. My God. Going up there, that was the big fear. It's like, you're going to make the show jump the shark, or you love it so much, you're the one that ruins it.
That show was great right until Smith.
Exactly. Good news is, right before my episode, like last week, you know, Barry, they tried to reenact the particle accelerator experiment, and Barry got killed. So when they handed me my episode, I'm like, wait, is The Flash even in it? and it is. So they gave me this wonderful episode written by Zach Stentz. Like, I, you know, thankfully they didn't leave it to me to write. I would have ruined it. But Zach Stentz is the guy that wrote Thor, and he wrote, co-wrote, I think, X-Men First Class. So he's got, like, Geek World bona fides in the cinema. He wrote my episode, and it's this beautiful, beautiful episode that is kind of geared more toward my strengths. Like, you know, they build that show on three pillars: heart, humor, and spectacle. And I can do heart and humor, and usually the third thing I do as the third pillar is D jokes, if you will.
Yes.
But they, you know, the spectacle is not really in my wheelhouse. Good news is, like, they do that show every week. They do spectacle every week, manageable spectacle, because they only got 8 days to shoot, like, 50 pages of a script and stuff. But they do special effects on that show that are amazing. The guy, Armin, in charge of the special effects, he directed last week's episode leading up to mine. They do a fantastic job over there. So I knew they'd handle the spectacle. But what I got to do big time in this episode, what I was really good at, it wasn't even so much the humor, because most of their humor is very family-friendly. You know, I'd be the guy going, Barry should say sea smoker, right?
Right.
So what I was able to handle very well, surprisingly, was the emotional stuff. And, you know, it oddly enough, because I cried watching the season finale, it was kind of training for this episode, because this episode is almost like a spiritual sequel to that season finale. There's some pictures out there in the world, so I guess the image is out there for people that care about this sort of thing. But this episode involves Barry's mom, and that's, like, huge whenever you watch that show. It's a story about a boy who lost his mom in a horrible crime in youth, and just that destroyed his family. So anytime, like, you know, they deal with the mom character, everybody's riveted. That's, like, to me, the heart and soul of the show. And so we got to do that stuff. Michelle plays his mom in the show. And Grant, like, who's wonderful in every episode. Grant's so good in this episode, he could win an Oscar, which is impossible because it's a television show.
Right.
But that's how strong he is in this episode. That to me was a delight, man, just watching everybody's process. Carlos, who plays Cisco, everybody, how they get to what they do on the show. Like, I didn't go up there going, let me show you people how to make The Flash. Like, they know how to do it. I was there because they make it so well. Instead, I came in and I was like, can you guys teach me how you do this in only 8 days? Like, that's an incredibly short amount of time. So it was great. That script, I got lucky, dude. If it was a script that was full of action, like, the next two episodes after mine are the two big season finales, and they would have been well outside of my reach. But this episode, like, it was balanced to the stuff I could do very well. When I opened it, it was like being dealt a royal flush in a game of poker, where you're like, oh my lord, I don't have to do anything. Like, this is phenomenal. So it turned out pretty darn well. With everything I've ever directed, this is my favorite directing job. It's not my favorite thing I've ever directed, like, because I've written and directed the other stuff. But in terms of a pure directing exercise, I think this is, like, as good as I've ever gotten.
Wait, is this more than Cop Out?
Yes.
Really?
This takes a jump over that.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to watch and see, because I doubt that.
Now, last week, The Flash was in the particle accelerator explosion. That's how it ended.
Yes. This week, we pick him up from that moment, and, you know, spoilers, wait for it if you don't want to hear it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here we go. He got killed. So our episode takes place where you go after you're no longer alive, if you follow.
Gotcha.
In the TV show, we call it the Speed Force. Barry's in the Speed Force and speaking to his maker in the Speed Force in various personas of people he's known throughout his life. It's a really wonderful episode, especially, you know, honestly, like, this is a show is generally thought of for young people, but it's incredible across all ages show. Like, me and Ralph are, you know, almost dead, and we love this show so
yes,
much.
I love it, too. Same.
Seen, it's such a good show.
Yep.
So when you get to, like, these points, when you get to the point of like, you know, you doing the emotional mom stuff, or you're doing like just a show like about a guy who run who solves all his problems by running really fast. At the end of the day, if they elevate it, which they do every week, they find somehow they're able to make that better than it should be, where you're like, oh my lord, this is, it's like the fact that his character runs really fast is almost superfluous. It becomes this wonderful performance family drama, like a soap opera for grown men and for children.
And you know, Kevin, you mentioned the mom factor, but it's very a dad-centric show too.
Oh, you ain't kidding.
You've got Joe, of course, West, who's sort of his surrogate dad. You've got Henry, his real dad, who's back in his life now. You've got Wells.
Barry has two dads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Wells is sort of like an uncle-y kind of dad, and he's, you know, he killed him, so that was cool. So.
On Fat Man, on Batman, the podcast they do, Mark Bernard, my co-host, he was pointing out, he's like, well, this is a show about a guy who's always looking for the father that he lost. His father got taken away to jail when he was a kid for a crime he didn't commit. So, like, he looks for surrogates. And, like, he's had Joe, and then he had Wells last season, but then Wells turned out to betray him. And then Jay Garrick shows up, and he's another surrogate father, and then he betrays him and stuff. So it's kind of Shakespearean like that. The show is insanely well done, man.
Kevin,
honestly, like, I can't take credit for this week's episode. I was there. I watched. My job was one of opinion and suggestion and cheerleading. It's not like I was like, hey, man, let me show you guys how to do it. Like, I said, hey, you could try like this, or what if we did this? And really, my biggest thing was cheerleading. I brought enthusiasm out the nose. So I would direct like this. I'd be like, all right, hold, folks, here we go, second take of this. Last time we're going to do it, and the only reason we're redoing this is because I missed something. All the good is yours, only the bad is mine. So here we go. As we head into this, remember, this is a moment in time that's never going to happen again, man. We will never be standing in these places saying these words at this exact moment. Like, this is it. This is it. Life comes down.
Did anybody say, hey, how about action?
And they said, lunch. We had to call for lunch, Kevin.
No, and they dug it. I would do like a 2-minute warm-up or roll-up before I would say action. And then it would be like, he directs like he's a Baptist preacher on coke. Like, I was just so energized.
All right, and who's the masked man in Zoom's lair?
The man in the iron mask?
Yes.
I'm not going to tell you because you're going to find out in 2 episodes. But I can't speak for everybody, but when I found out, I cried. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, you're doing
really,
a lot of
really
that these
poetic
days.
But I cried everything, so that doesn't say yes.
The Flash airs tonight on the CW at 8 o'clock. Our friend Kevin Smith directed the episode. And don't forget, the boys are back in town at the Improv this weekend. Is that right, Ralph? Friday night at the Hollywood Improv?
Friday night at 10 p.m. We're back on stage with Hollywood Babylon Live at the Improv on Melrose. So we'd love to have you come out and see us. And Kevin may have a thing or two to say about
this episode.
Yeah.
Get your tickets at tsmod.com or improv.com. Kevin, thanks for jumping on, man. We'll look forward to the episode tonight, dude. Thanks.
Love you all. Bye.
I think, Kevin, as a result of K-Rock sharing a hotel, Weenie Roast Weekend, with the furry convention for a number of years, I feel like we have a lot of furries listening to this program. We've met a lot of them over the years.
We have, yeah.
And they're very sweet people, and I'm excited for them and for you to see this documentary that is available today called Fursonas. It's on iTunes, it's on demand, it's on all the streaming services. The director is on the phone. Here's a taste of what you get in the film Fursonas.
What's a furry?
It just simply means human, or an animal with human, I can't remember how to explain it.
It's true, I am a weirdo because I do this, it's not normal.
Nobody could see me. Nobody knew who I was, so I could be as energetic, as happy, as crazy as I could be, and people loved it. And after that first time I did it, I really felt, it's like, this is what it feels like.
After 3 years in the making, the film is available for us to see today. The director, Dominic Rodriguez, on the line with us right now. Hey, Dominic, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're good, thank you. We appreciate very much you coming on and giving us the opportunity to see your movie. Why'd you want to make a furry movie?
Well, for starters, as a filmmaker, it was just a matter of convenience, actually, because AnthroCon is the largest furry convention in the world, and that was happening right at the time that I needed to have a senior thesis film idea, so that's where this all started. But I also have been interested in furry stuff for a really long time, like since I was like 12 years old, so I never really thought any media had really done it justice. Like,
and what do you dress up? I'm sorry, what do you dress up as?
A wolf.
A wolf. Is that, you know, I didn't see this mentioned in the movie. What is the breakdown of the most popular characters that furries choose to be?
I think it's wolves and foxes, I think, are the most popular. You see a lot of canines and a lot of things that, like, probably like pets, things that people would have had as pets, I think, because there's just an affection for animals like that. I don't see as many, like, food, like lobster or, like,
I never thought about a furry lobster before. Dominic, what do people mean? And there are a couple of them in your film who talk about that their interest in being a furry comes from developing or experiencing more fully their spirit animal. Can you put that in words for me that would help me understand that feeling a little better?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's people where it is just so ingrained with who they are, like somebody like Boomer the dog, like that he feels like he is a dog more than he feels like he is a human. And some people say that, well, that's not really furry, that's maybe more therian, and that's the word for like when it's actually in line with your like spirituality. But furry is so broad that it kind of encompasses a little bit of everything. I think that for a lot of furries, myself included, it's more than a hobby in the sense that I think it's part of who I am. I just have a connection with it. I think about it every single day, you know, so I think it's just because of what I want to be.
What is the biggest misconception with furries?
I think what I normally say to that question is, like, if people think that it's just a sex thing, and I emphasize just, because I don't want people to think that that sex isn't a part of it, because it is for a lot of people. But if that's all that people see it as, I think that's doing it a disservice, because it's a very vibrant community with a lot of different, you know, things that interest people.
I will say this. We did stay at the same hotel, like Bean mentioned, as the Califur convention, mm-hmm. and everybody there that was a furry was thrilled to be there. It was such a happy group.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go to Califur this year if I can make it. That would be great.
One of the things that I kind of noticed that was a bond between a lot of the furries profiled in your film, and this is director Dominic Rodriguez talking about the film Fursonas here on the Kevin and Bean Show, is that these people in many ways otherwise in their life felt like outsiders. They weren't popular kids, and this was a community for them, just like people would find a gaming community or would find sports would be their outlet. I felt like there was a lot of that, is like people coming together, maybe people that are awkward, maybe people that have trouble communicating, can put on a suit and not worry about any of that and be around a bunch of people that welcome them. And I thought that was so sweet, Dominic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I definitely feel like that a lot. I feel like in a lot of us, even furries or not, I think a lot of us feel like outsiders because there's things that, you know, I don't know, it's just, I think that's like a human thing, you know, like we want to reach out to people that have like interests, and it's just about finding people that we can connect with.
There were also some points in the movie where I felt like furries had judgment on the right way to be a furry. Just like you hear conversations about you're not the right kind of Christian, or you're not the right kind of Lakers fan, or whatever it is. It seems like there's a lot of that going on in the community where people are kind of judging how other people choose to be a furry too. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that when you're within the community, it prides itself on being an accepting place, and I think it is for the most part. When you're in it, whatever you identify as like however you choose to live furry or not live furry, like that's kind of fine. But this gets more complicated when you talk about the media and like who should be elected to go out in the media and talk about furry.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people think that I should not be the authority on this, and I don't want to be. I just happen to make the movie. So that's why I think it's important to talk to other people and get their perspectives on it. But it's definitely a very, there's a lot of arguing about that on a daily basis, I would say.
Who is this Uncle Kage guy, and why did he become the king of the furries? Why do so many people listen so closely to what he says?
He's been the chairman of AnthroCon, so that's the largest furry convention, for about 20 years. I think he's just been a part of it for such a long time, and not everybody really cares about what he has to say, but there's definitely enough people that look up to him as an authority figure that, you know, I think his point of view really matters. And I think that way of thinking that, like, your individuality is not as important as kind of protecting the group, that's something that a lot of people share.
You brought up Boomer the dog earlier. That guy's a nut job, though, right?
If not caring what anybody thinks about you makes you a nut job, then
right.
Yeah. But
right.
I would love to be.
But there's always
a nut job.
There's always that guy that agrees with you, and you go, you know what? I'm not positive I want you on my side.
He did go to court to try to change his name to Boomer the dog, right, Dominic?
He did. It's funny because they didn't let him do it. And I hope that one day he can actually change his name, because I don't know what the big deal is, really.
Is he really a furry, though? He's more of like a papery. Because it looks like it's made out of paper, right? Not fur.
Right. Right, but furry's supposed to be about all the, there are people that are dragons, you know, that not everybody's literally furry. It's supposed to be this all-encompassing term involving people that are into, like, human-animal hybrid anything. So the one of the core things of furry is that it's an accepting community about creativity. And so his suit, to me, is the most creative one.
Boomer, he barks like a dog. He's got he puts his pigtails up like he's got ears. He wears a collar around his neck. We mentioned he tried to change his name. He cuts out pictures of dogs and puts them in scrapbooks. He's got pictures of dogs in frames around his apartment. But I couldn't help but notice, and tell me if I'm wrong, Dominic, he doesn't have a dog.
He used to have a dog.
But he doesn't
have a dog.
Like,
but why does he need a dog?
But wouldn't you think he would want to be part of a pack? Like, he would want to be with other dogs? It was just so shocking to me that he didn't have a dog.
He says it's just kind of a practical thing right now, because if he does traveling, he doesn't necessarily have anybody to take care of it right now. And he's living very much on the cheap as far as, you know, where his life is at right now. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's a good thing.
I love that that's what Bean focused on.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Boomer have a dog?
It's just surprise.
You guys are really into the hard-hitting issues here.
Well, thank you. That's what we're about. Let me ask you one more question, Dominic. And again, the film is called Fursonas. It's available on iTunes On Demand and all the streaming services. You can see it on Amazon, Google Play, YouTube, Vudu, Xbox, PlayStation. I mean, the movie is really, really out there. And if you've ever had questions or have been curious about the furries, this is a definite great place for you to start. Somebody mentioned in the movie, one of your subjects mentioned in the movie, that 80% of furries are gay and the other 20% are bi. And I was really surprised by that. I didn't know that, if those numbers are anywhere near accurate. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, the first thing I have to say to that is, like, he's not a scientist.
No, of course not. Of course not.
It's said in kind of a throwaway sort of, like, in his experience, it's been this. But actually, in my experience, yeah, there's a lot of people on the LGBT kind of spectrum. And the people have different theories about that. I mean, maybe because the community is this accepting place, people feel more comfortable with expressing that side of themselves. Or maybe there's some deep-rooted psychological explanation for gayness in the fandom. But I certainly don't know, and that's part of why I didn't interview a psychologist, because I didn't necessarily want to impose, like, an answer on that. I like to kind of let people speculate for themselves.
Is there something about covering your face that gives you a freedom to be someone else?
Oh, it's helped me a ton, like, as far as, like, doing interviews and stuff like that, and, like, being in front of crowds of hundreds of people. It's nice to be able to only look at one of them at a time. It makes it a little easier to do this kind of stuff.
Well, congratulations on the documentary. I know you've been working on it for a long time. You put a lot of effort in it, and it's really, really good. Fursonas is what it's called. Dominic, I'm glad we had a chance to chat with you today. Continued success, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You bet. Thank you. A lot of fun. All right, 1-800-520-1067. That is our number. As you know, all this week on the Kevin and Bean Show, we're giving away not just tickets, but tickets in the front row to this Saturday's K-Rock Weenie Rose 2016 at Irvine Meadows. Kevin, what are we looking for this time around?
Well, we're doing kazooing you.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So that means
Dave
the King of Mexico is going to be kazooing hits from bands that are playing the K-Rock Weenie
Rose. Have you heard him try to kazoo?
I have.
Well, here's the good thing. Yesterday, during the meeting, Ralph pointed out something that none of us knew, that Dave was using the wrong side of the kazoo the last two times.
First, so he was blowing into it, and now he's humming into the wrong end.
Yes.
Okay.
So now this might actually be the best kazooing you ever.
Nope.
Okay. All right. So if you know and love the bands and the songs they're playing this weekend, now's the time to call for front row tickets. 1-800-520-1067. We'll kazoo and you next on K-Rock.
106.7 K-Rock.
Not yet.
KROQ. Oh, this is the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 7:24.
Stand down, son. 1-800-520-1067. Tickets in the front row for this Saturday's K-Rock Weenie Rose 2016. It's time to play Kazoo and You. Hit it, Steve.
It's Kazoo and You. Just guess the tune we play for you. It's Kazoo and You, because we love kazoos and you do too. It's Kazoo and You, and you win some ticks, not one but two. It's Kazoo and You. Come on, let's play Kazoo and You.
I think, as long as the recorder lives, that the kazoo can be the worst musical instrument, but it's pretty close,
it's
right?
It's very close, yeah.
And Dave, how much experience do you have playing the instrument?
About 3 days.
We've done this contest two other times.
Yeah.
The first time he blew into it instead of humming.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then the second time, he hummed into it at the wrong end. So we thought today may be the best.
Today's okay. Day. And I got two new ones. So.
Oh, that'll help.
Oh, yeah.
So Dave is going to be kazooing one of the songs from one of the bands that you'll be hearing this weekend at the K-Rock Weenie Roast. All you have to do is identify it by title and artist. If you're right, you go into the drawing. Someone wins the tickets. Who's our first contestant?
Please? Matthew and Whittier. Hi there. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. Hey, this is Matt.
All right, Matt.
Hey, it's me.
We're playing Kazoo and You. Listen up. Dave is going to be doing one of the songs from one of the bands at the Weenie Roast this weekend. You tell us what it is, okay?
All right.
All right. Here it goes.
That's fine. That's fine. Good. Thank you, Dave. Go ahead, Matthew.
That Hey Ho from the Lumineers?
It sure the hell is.
Sure is. Or Ho Hey, either way.
Well, I can't believe they haven't asked you to join the band,
you think
Dave.
Let me join with the kazoo?
Sure.
It fits right in.
Here's the thing. Yeah. They don't want to say to you out loud, come out with the kazoo. I think you just rush the stage.
Hey, I'm game.
Just start playing.
I'm game.
All right, let's go to Alex in Moreno Valley. Hi.
Woo. One for one.
Yo, what up, Kevin and Bean?
You.
Kazoo and You is what's up. Good luck. This is for front row seats to the Weenie Roast.
All right.
Break it down. All right.
That's fine. Thank you, Dave. Right. Thank you, Dave. Alex, what song? What
don't
band?
That part. Alex.
You got me good, Davey. You got me good.
Come on, that was easy.
Oh, you don't know it. It's only easy if you're looking at it, I think, because that was... I'm only happy when
it rains. I got to back my boy here. I thought that was good.
That's
I thought that.
Right.
What'd you think, Allie? I thought that was real good.
I thought it was garbage.
Okay. It was garbage.
Oh.
Yeah, it was garbage.
Oh, then it was good.
Yeah.
Marcel
yeah.
and Montebello. Hi.
All right, switch it up.
Hello.
All right, hey. You ready for Kazoo and You?
As ready as I'm gonna be.
All right, good luck.
Right, here we go.
Ow.
Did good you start. Just knock your teeth?
Yes, he did.
I almost did. Yeah, all right, here we go.
All right. Marcel, so,
let the air out of that balloon.
I'm so glad it was the Chili Pepper song,
Californication. Yeah!
All right.
Two out of three.
In the drawing, let's try to squeeze in a couple of more. Who's up next?
Can we add a rule that Dave doesn't play this any outside of the actual clips?
Tonight.
I think that's a good rule.
Okay, Erica Nate. Is next in Los Angeles. Hi, Erica.
Hi!
Oh, hi!
Oh. Hi, Nick.
Erica, you've been playing along, waiting for your turn. How have you been doing with Dave and the kazoo?
Oh, my God. It's so hard. He looks so hard.
Because he's terrible. That's
or
why.
The best. All right. Here we go. All right, Erica. Here we go.
All right. Okay. Thank you, David. That's fine, David. Thank you. Erica. All right. That's fine. What title and artist, please?
It's Lisa and the song. Oh, my God. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's it. Part of the Sun.
All right.
Nice try.
Yeah. All right. Let's do one more.
All right. Cool.
Steve in Los Angeles. Hi.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Are you ready for Kazoo and You?
I'm going to try my best.
Best of luck.
All right, here we go.
Okay, that's all right. That's plenty. Thank you, Dave.
Pretty good.
All right, Steve, what says you?
He's amazing. Pack and disco. I write Sins Not Tragedies.
There it is.
I feel like that's a good point to stop,
yeah,
right? Steve, Marcel, and Matthew all correctly identified the songs Dave was playing on the kazoo. Only one will win tickets in the front row to join us this Saturday at the K-Rock Weenie Roast 2016 at Irvine Meadows. Alan McKay, who's our winner, please?
Our last contestant, Steve.
Steve!
Yeah! Hit it!
Congratulations, Woo! Steve!
Yeah, that was awesome, Dave.
Thank you, man.
Front row for the Weedy Roast.
There.
Thanks for playing.
Kazoo and you.
Kazoo!
Alex Jones is back, you guys. I've become a little bit re-obsessed with Alex Jones recently. He's the talk show host. He's got an internet channel called InfoWars. He's big into he's a 9/11 truther. He's into chemtrails. He's into the Illuminati. He's that guy.
And all conspiracy all the time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And he also has been really laying down the law lately on who's good and who's bad. Who's for God, who's for Satan. He's the one who determines that. Here's a little bit of his most recent rant.
I'm going to be honest with everybody. My gut, my spirit, the last few months, I've told you this, but intensifying. Evil's being let out of the pit right now. I can feel it rising. Mm-hmm. And I can also feel good rising, the spirit of God coming back in the world as well. We are in very dangerous waters. And people like Donald Trump are only one manifestation of what's going on. He's obviously a guy, an alpha male that likes prosperity, loves this country. I think he's got a lot of worldly issues and problems, don't we all? But people that got a lot of good also have a lot of bad. Our enemies are the people that don't have hardly any good, but have a bunch of bad.
All right, is everyone tracking?
Okay. I need the breakdown. What's the ratio of good to bad? So we're on the same page.
So I think what Mr. Jones is telling us, I believe he is a yes on Donald Trump. Yeah, he's not perfect, but his heart's in the right place, and he's trying to do good for America. But he's about to drop the bomb on somebody who thinks he thinks is the opposite, which is fellow conservative talk show host Glenn Beck, who has thrown his lot in with Ted Cruz. So Trump good, I think we'll find out Beck bad.
And I don't enjoy getting up here and attacking people like Glenn Beck. Let's get that straight.
Right.
But when I see manifest smoking evil, the guy's on fire with sniveling evil. So at a spiritual level, I can see him, and I can see all of his fruits, and it's just a prancing demon, a Nelly feminine con artist preying on people, and it makes me want to throw up. Okay. I'll just be honest with you.
Okay, you're just being honest with us. All right, so we wanted to get some clarification on who we should be rooting for and who we should be again. And I think Alex Jones is on the phone with us right now from Infowars.com. Hey, Alex.
I'm surprised you're even having me on.
Well, we just like
we have
to
questions.
You don't want to have the truth out there. You want to keep it to yourself, and you don't want people to recognize what's happening in their own lives and their own situations, and they're going to make a move. And when that move happens, all the flaming demons, all the smoking, dancing, prancing Nellies will be put away, and then all everybody will be inside the envelope, won't they?
Okay, I don't know what that means. The envelope is that you're referring to.
But go back to this later.
Donald Trump, is he Christian enough and conservative enough for you, Alex?
Of course he is. The man who obviously loves God, he loves his country.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, does he have problems? Of course. Everybody does. But what happens is he wants to make America great again. And
there's
so many people trying to bring this great country down that if we don't have an alpha male in that situation, a leader of the pack, a leader of the pride, the man who will take us to the Serengeti and help us hunt the gazelle, then nobody eats.
Wait. He's taking us to Africa?
Serengeti?
Serengeti, of course, is I'm talking about the spiritual plane, not the plains of Africa, but the plains of the soul. And if you don't get out there, and if you don't fight the good fight, then the next thing you know, the whole water hole dries up, and then what do you have? A muddy mouth.
Well, no one wants a muddy mouth.
You're damn right, they don't.
All right, so Glenn Beck is literally on fire.
He's the worst. He is off. You know his transmission that he does with his when he's on the air. The transmission actually causes sterility. It will destroy your essence. That is the truth.
If you take
what he does, put the speaker up to a glass of water. You'll watch that water become deionized. Do you want ions in your water or not? You need ions, my friend.
Is that good?
How often do you get to solar neutralization?
Wait, we want ions?
Of course you want your ions.
What are they good for?
Well, you take them away and you'll see what they're bad for.
Okay.
Good point.
Okay. All right, so I will become sterile if I watch Glenn Beck on TV.
Absolutely, because that signal will do nothing but disintegrate into nitrogen powder, which, of course, will it take over every cell in your body. And then the next thing you know, what you become? A dancing, smoking demon. And if you want to be that, that's on you, but I choose not to, my friend.
All right, but Alex Jones, just humor me here. So he backs a different presidential candidate in the same party than you do. Why does that make him Satan?
Because I am trying to save this country of ours. I don't care about politics. I don't care about who wins an election. I care about saving the country. For example, where are the huckleberries?
You mean the fruit, the huckleberry?
Absolutely, the fruit. Do you see them in the stores? Do you see huckleberry muffins? Do you see huckleberry candies? Do you see huckleberry croutons? No, you don't.
Why don't we?
Because exactly, why don't we? Because those are the fruits that once made this country great. And there's no Huckleberries. There's no Huckleberry Hound. You don't even see the cartoon anymore. Huckleberry Finn? Who's reading that book? Donald Trump will once again bring us back to Huckleberries.
I wasn't aware.
Wow, I didn't know that that was...
That was a board in his campaign.
It's
That's
a
fantastic.
Fruit!
Okay, all right.
Like we always do at this time. What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and testify. What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and notify. What are we missing and not talking about? Call up so we can be down. 1-800-520-1067. What's good?
What's good?
I got a good batch here. Let's go to Sergio to get us started. He's on line one, and he joins us from Orange, California.
Hey, Sergio.
Hey, guys. It's me.
Hey, Sergio.
What's good, Serge?
I wanted to talk to little Miss Allison Esmeralda McKay.
Okay.
And let her know that no one is going to murder her. Nobody wants to murder you, Allie.
Thank you. You do realize I only joke about murder when it comes to hikes and when you take a cruise. Because when you watch Dateline like I do, that's when it happens.
Maybe less Dateline.
Oh, no. That's crazy talk.
Okay, so you don't
take a cruise. No, I just don't hike or take cruises.
Right.
Because that's where the murder happens, Sergio. That's just, it's science.
That's true, but... wake up in the morning... and say, you know what, I think I'll go out and murder a morning radio personality. Because that would be difficult, seeing as how they don't know what you look like or where you live.
It's science.
Nobody knows what I look like.
That's
You're
true.
Correct. wasn't on TV for 14 years, and there's no internet to find out. So you are right, Sergio.
Right.
Thank you.
I hope you feel a lot better having heard from Sergio.
I do.
Allison, if that's really your name. All right, thank you for the call, sir. Let's go to Nadine, please. Inglewood, line four, up next to the Kevin DeBeat Show. Nadine is calling about a pet peeve of mine, too.
All right, Nadine, hi.
Morning, guys. Morning, Allison. You are so correct. Stay in the house, eat potato chips. Don't
thank
hike.
Thank you.
My pet peeve is PBS. You know, you're watching with your family. They guilt you into donating $40. Oh, thank you so much. We're not going to bother you again. It's a one-time thing. In December, you get the letter in the springtime. I'm like, oh, my God. What do I do? You can't throw it away. It's PBS. You feel guilty. What do you do?
Nadine, she has PBS feelings.
Nadine, I have an answer to that, and that's stop watching PBS. That's what I would do.
All right, hold on a sec. First of all, Nadine, you shouldn't be guilted into supporting PBS. You should want to support PBS because of all the wonderful programming they give.
Right, or that.
That's where you lose me. But I will tell you that I am so... I understand why they do it, because they found a revenue source. And this happens to me all the time. You go, hey, I'm going to donate money to this charity that I believe in, that I think is a good cause. And then you're hooked into them for life. Like, you never stop hearing from them. I get phone calls. I get letters in the mail. I get emails from people because I donated one time to them. And look, I understand why they do it, but it's super annoying to me, too. Am I wrong?
I do that Christmas time. No, you're not. But
you're wrong
Christmas
for a lot of other reasons.
Bad.
Okay, so but then you don't want to be bothered. Is there a little box you can check, like one time?
Dude, you can't
they
get off of their list.
One time. They tell you one time, but I'm going to donate because, you know, I watch it. Not just in the fall. I'll do the spring now.
Okay.
Yeah, it works.
They guilt you right into it.
All right, Nadine. Thank you for the call, my dear. Appreciate it. Let's go to line five, please. San Pedro, this is going to be Joey. I think maybe he's got a good idea.
Hey, Joey.
Good morning, people.
Good morning, Allison. Joey. Wow, Allison's catching on.
is that even your name, Allie?
It's my middle name, yeah. Nobody
okay.
knows my first name because murder.
It's
right,
Dolores.
Sergio?
It's Dolores. All right, Joey, go ahead.
All right, so after that beautiful segment yesterday morning of, you know, your fellow Bostonian who brought up the idea, I had the brilliant idea of why not do a segment of a moment with Kevin, but in slow motion.
Okay, let me bring people up to speed, Joey, who weren't with us yesterday. We had an email from a listener in Boston who accidentally hit the half speed on his iPhone when he was listening to the podcast, and he pointed out how hilarious it was, so much funnier than regular speed because we all sounded super drunk.
Now, I hate to butt in, but Bean, did you tell Omar to slow it down?
Yeah. Okay. I think we're going to do Joey's suggestion here. Yeah.
Right. But this is a moment with you, not a moment with me.
Okay. That's fine.
Which I'm perfectly happy with.
Let's see what Joey's idea sounds like. So we take moments with and slow those down. Let's see if those are even better.
And now a moment with Bean.
He's a great ancillary ancillary.
Right, what
he's a great ancillary character.
I like
that
it.
That was a moment with Dean.
Yeah, the problem with Kevin is he sounds pretty much the same slowed down.
Hmm. Yeah, I wish that didn't.
That was awesome, thanks.
All right, let's do one more real quick because our guests are here. Let's make it Paul. He's on line 8. He's in calling us all the way from North Carolina, where I assume he's streaming the show. Paul, welcome. What's going on, dude?
Hey, yes, I'm streaming in North Carolina because
said that.
You guys are much more funnier than some of the local stations.
Thank you. What's good? What can we do for you?
I've been trying to call in for the last couple of weeks since you did the Quidditch thing, but I keep either missing you live or I get booted out.
The Quidditch is an actual sport that's going on college campuses all over the United States.
Oh, yes. UNCG here at Greensboro is 30 minutes away from me. I would sit and watch them practice about nightly. They take it seriously. It looks silly with the broomsticks running between their legs. They don't have a free hand, but they actually take it kind of seriously.
Paul,
yes.
You would watch them practice Quidditch nightly.
Yeah, I was bored back then, and I had friends at the college, so. And I was a Harry Potter fan, and I was really curious, and I was just as curious as you guys. I wanted to know how they did it, so.
But the first time you saw them running around with a broom between their legs, didn't you go, all right, not
I'm
Quidditch,
out.
I'm out.
I gave him a chance.
You gave him multiple chances.
You gave him nightly chances.
I think you like seeing dudes run around with broomsticks between their legs. That's what I think.
And that's fine, Paul.
Well, of course, not flying. They didn't say they were flying. They were just running around.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks for calling, I think.
What's good?
This is going to be fun. The acclaimed director Rob Reiner in studio with his son Nick Reiner. Together they have collaborated on a film that Nick wrote, Rob directed, called Being Charlie, in theaters everywhere. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having us, Kevin and Bean.
Nick's already pressing the cough button. I see you over there.
And coughing.
Oh, okay, then.
I can't imagine how fraught with danger a relationship like yours would be. First-time screenwriter working with a director like Rob Reiner, and then you throw in, hey, father and son, I can't imagine that this was an easy project for you guys to do together.
It was a snap.
Really?
No.
That is a lie. I realized halfway through you was my dad.
Yeah. And then that's when it got tough. Up till then, it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine before that.
Was there a lot of, hey, I wrote this screenplay, hey, I've directed a lot of movies kind of conversation back and forth?
There was a little of that, but I mean, mostly it was just the two of us working very closely together and, you know, very emotional at times contentious, but ultimately the most satisfying creative experience I've ever had.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. And we should give people a background on what Being Charlie is all about. Nick, why don't you take this one since you wrote the movie?
Okay. Being Charlie is a story about a kid who goes through some hard times as an adolescent and, well, you'd be better at this.
Yeah, no, he
I'm not good at this.
The hard times that he's talking about is is experience with substance abuse and being in and out of rehabs over the course of a number of years, and it's all about his difficulty with drugs and his relationship to his parents. His father is running for governor of California, and they are at odds with each other, and it's how Charlie copes with coming to grips with his drug problems and his identity and all of that, and his father's starting to understand what his son is experiencing.
Okay, but Rob, when we watch the movie and we see his dad is running for governor of California, in my mind, should I think, oh, he's making a movie with Morgan Freeman? I mean, are there parallels involved with the real story that you two lived together?
Yeah, there are parallels, but it is not autobiographical. I mean, it is a fiction, but we did take liberally from our own lives. I mean, I am interested in politics, and I have, lived that kind of life.
And that part of it is interesting to touch on because that just shows we were trying to convey with that a character who is having a drug problem who also has to go through it while in sort of in the public eye. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, you did something I never thought a movie could do, which was make me dislike Cary Elwes. Because that's pretty tough to do.
Yeah, you know? No, the Dread Pirate Roberts, you're supposed to like him. But we also made Cary a former movie star who was in a series of pirate movies. We did that intentionally.
Nick, how's your sobriety now?
It's going good. It's going good. You know, it's a day-to-day thing, and I think it's different for everybody, but, you know, today, talking to you, I'm good.
Are you a person who keeps track of the days?
No, because I feel that, you know, you get caught up with that, and you start getting obsessed about it.
I can imagine that doing this movie, not only father and son, but somewhat autobiographical, you're also working through things you may never have talked about.
Yes. I mean, as close as we have been, and that's the one thing that's not reflected in the film, we were close even during the Nick's most difficult time.
Yeah, in this movie, the father and son are not close.
Yeah, but I still...
We were close during it.
Yeah, we were close, but I still didn't really understand what Nick was going through. And making this movie did force me to understand a little bit better of what he went through. And I think it brought us closer together.
I didn't understand what he was going through. I didn't understand him in general. So, like, going back to what you said earlier about, like, was there ever a conversation like, oh, I wrote this script, oh, I direct a lot of movies. There was one conversation probably which I said that, and then I learned from him. He's done a lot of this. He's a lot of experience, and I should probably learn from him.
Directors usually win that argument, I feel like.
Yeah, well, that's the argument
so do fathers.
I gave.
You lose on two counts.
I think this is a really important movie for people to see if they have addiction within their friends and families, and there are very few of us who don't. But the thing that really interested me, guys, is I don't know what the addict wants. What did the character in Being Charlie want his father to say?
You want to answer that, Nick?
I think that he just wanted I think he wanted him to talk to him on a human level instead of just like you're a problem to me, you know. Or, you know, like at the end when he says, like, I like your stand-up. Like, something along those lines, like, where he, you know, embraces him for who he is.
The thing with this movie, I know addiction pretty well. And the ending, I won't give away the ending, but it wasn't schmaltzy. It wasn't, you know, oh, thank God, it's a happy ending. But it was hopeful in a way that I don't think any other movies about addiction portray.
Yeah, no, what we tried to show is that it is an ongoing struggle, and that you have to keep working at getting closer and understanding. We see Charlie go off. We don't know how he's going to do. We're hoping he's going to be okay, but it's the beginning of him getting his own identity. Mm-hmm. And once he has that thing that's passionate for him and that he cares about, maybe he's going to be okay. And we see the beginnings of the father getting closer to his son. It's not all wrapped up in a pretty bow, but at least we're on the right track, and hopefully things will be okay.
There must have been a lot of times over the course of the years that Nick had addiction problems, Rob, where you just wanted to throw your hands up and just didn't know what to do next.
Yes, absolutely.
So much frustration.
There was a lot of frustration, and it's reflected in the film where the father says, you know, I just listened to anybody who had a desk and a diploma, because you don't know what to do. As a parent, all you want, your main charge is to keep your child safe. And so when you're seeing something like this happen, you basically throw your hands, you know, throw yourself into the hands of experts. And I think that was one of the big mistakes I made, and I should have just gone with my own instinct. And I know my son better than a lot of experts do, and I've learned that as we've gone along.
Now, Nick, you went to a bunch of different rehabs in a bunch of different states, right? Or was that the character? I'm sorry, I don't... Is that you? Or...
That part is me.
Okay, that part is you. How many different states by the time you were 18?
I'll say it on radio.
Okay.
Eight different states.
Wow. Why different states?
They offer different treatments in those states.
Oh, okay.
And that's also the problem with the rehab industry. One place will go, oh, I know a place in Minnesota. And then once you relapse there because it doesn't work and it's your fault, I know a place in Montana. I know a place in Utah, and so on and so forth.
So you're just shuffling the problem.
Yeah, and especially if they have someone who they think, oh, you know, who went to this rehab? Right. So-and-so.
And money plays a huge part in rehab.
And the problem is they talk about them them being dual diagnosis. In other words, they treat the drug addiction and the underlying problems. But the truth is they don't really get at the underlying problems. And that's the most important thing, because everybody is an individual. And why you are self-medicating, why you are taking drugs, is individual to that person. And they basically try to force you into a cookie-cutter approach, and it doesn't really work.
What do you think was so effective the last time, Nick, that has stuck for a while now?
Was not going to a program and figuring out it out at home and trying to deal with the problems I had with my mom and my dad and what went wrong before everything started to go kind of haywire.
Yeah, I think that was the main thing for us, is that,
how about that?
He wanted us. He wanted us to be there for him. And a lot of these programs are punitive. You know, to me, if somebody's having a problem, you don't punish them for having a problem. It's not like they're doing this because they want to. They're struggling with themselves. And so we started to recognize that. And I think for Nick, you know, finding writing, you know, I think that helped him, you know, find something more passionate for him.
You did a good job with the script. And I'll tell you, the guy who plays you in the movie, Nick Robinson, is tremendous.
He's phenomenal.
Like, that's the takeaway for me in this movie is, wow, this kid's a star, right?
Yeah, he's a great actor.
Really good.
You know, we saw him in Kings of Summer and we loved him in that. I hadn't seen Jurassic World at that point, but he came in and read with the guy who plays his friend in the movie, Devin Bostick, who plays Adam.
He's also good.
He's great. Yeah. And they read together and it was like, wow, it was like, you immediately, these are two guys that have been best friends forever. Yeah. And we cast both of them.
Well, it's a really important movie, you guys. It's called Being Charlie. It's in theaters now. You can see it at the Lemleys in Beverly Hills in Santa Monica and in Encino. And I'm sure it'll be opening wider after that. Rob Reiner is here along with Nick Reiner. We'll take a quick break. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Father and son, Rob and Nick Reiner in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Their film is called Being Charlie. Nick wrote it. Rob produced and directed it. Again, Being Charlie in theaters everywhere. I can't imagine, Rob, how many offers you must get to direct movies. I gotta imagine you're turning down stuff all the time.
You know, some I do, but there's a lot of not good. I mean, there's a lot of bad writing out there, unfortunately. In this case, Nick and his writing partner, Matt Elisoffen, initially wrote a half-hour comedy that wasn't... I didn't even know they were working on it, based on their experiences. They met in a rehab facility, and this was based on their experiences. And I read it, and I thought it was funny, but it needed a little bit more depth to it. And then they went back and rewrote and made an hour comedy drama, and then we couldn't sell it. And then I suggested that we make a screenplay. But the only reason I did it is because the writing was good, you know? And I thought, obviously, I have, you know, a connection to it in that I've gone through a lot of what the characters have gone through. Mm-hmm. But it was based on the good writing. And I thought, okay, these guys really do know what they're talking about. And they have observed this and they've written it very real.
You don't just snap your fingers and then all of Hollywood has to do what you say?
No. I wish it were so.
Should be.
I wish it were so. No, I was saying the other day that, you know, at Castle Rock, the company we formed almost 30 years ago, we've made over 125 pictures. Not one of them would ever get made at a studio, because we don't make those kind of pictures that, you know, are the franchise type, you know, action CGI type pictures. So, you know, now we have to scrounge around all the time for trying to get financing for a picture.
I hear that all the time from people in the movie industry, how it has changed so radically in the last 15 years or so, 20 years maybe, partly because the eye is on the foreign dollars, right? So a lot of those smaller movies that used to get made that we used to go and see and love just don't get made anymore.
Well, they either don't get made or it's a real struggle to get them made because they don't have that, like you say, that foreign appeal. I mean, the big action pictures translate all over the world, and the studios are in the business to make money, so they don't care about anything, but they don't care about the art part.
How every week then is there a movie where we go, I don't understand how that got made?
Because there are people running around really trying hard to find, and there are new investors that pop up all over the place. I mean, to give you an example, like Wolf of Wall Street, which was a big, big hit, it took Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, two big players in Hollywood, 6 years to get funding for it. And then, even then, a studio didn't fund it. It was a company called Red Granite that funded it. And then a studio released it. So it's difficult for everybody if you want to make anything that isn't in that formula.
If you were in charge, Rob, would you do things differently? Because, as you point out, the studios are in business to make money. It is a business.
Yeah, no, I listen, if I were in charge, I would probably do similar to what they're doing, but I would have a division of the company that made special type of movies. Now, there are divisions of these companies that release these pictures. There's Fox Searchlight, there's Sony Classics, but they don't make the movies. They just distribute them.
Okay.
So I would have a division that actually developed for filmmakers, which is what Castle Rock was initially, which was a place for filmmakers to come and do the kind of pictures they wanted to do. And we felt, you know, like we were, you know, supporting them.
Now, Nick, what kind of movies did you like? You wrote the screenplay for this. So you must have. What kind of movies are your taste?
Just to keep it in a thematic sort of thing, like of my dad's. I've seen all of his movies. I probably like Stand By Me the best.
But you sort of had to see those, right?
As an American, you have to see those movies, by the way.
I didn't spend enough time thinking about that question. How about that?
Better.
Speaking of the father-son aspect of getting this movie made, I want to go back to something you said in the first segment, Nick, which was talking about your character in the movie, the character you wrote for the film, kind of growing up in the spotlight because his dad is running for governor. You grew up in the spotlight because of who your famous father was. Rob, you grew up in the spotlight because who your famous father was. What did you learn from growing up as Carl Reiner's son that you tried to do differently raising Nick?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because I knew if any of my children wanted to go into show business, I knew that it was going to be very, very hard for them.
Because of
what I had been through. Mm-hmm. And because I had children late in life, I thought, well, by the time they're of age to choose their professions and what direction they're going to go in, I'll be old and a has-been, and nobody will know who I am, and it'll be easier for them. It didn't turn out that way, unfortunately, for them.
I'm stunned to hear you say that being Carl Reiner's son made it more difficult for you to get into show business.
It did. Well, it doesn't make it more difficult to get in. It makes it more difficult to stay in.
Yeah.
I mean, the door opens, but it closes damn quick if you don't have something to deliver.
If you're not good, you're not sustaining it anyway. But on that level, that door is shutting real quick.
Yeah, it's shutting real quick because you have to, first of all, deliver, but you're also being compared. Sure. And I was being compared to a man that won 12 Emmys, you know, and was somebody that the world knew. So it was very, very difficult, and also a struggle internally to carve my own identity separate and apart from my father. And I think it's going to be doubly difficult for Nick. I mean, he's starting to do it because he's working on a project now that is something that I would never have approached at age 22 that he is working on now. So
what is that?
Can't talk about that.
Is it furries?
I'm going to get kicked out of this business before I got in.
All right. Well,
it is furries, actually.
Rob, if I remember correctly, you weren't planning on being an actor, right?
No. I mean, I until I was a senior in high school, I liked a lot of other types of things. I liked the science and math, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I'd go into some area there. And then I got with the actors in my class, and I said, okay, these people feel familiar. But then I wasn't really interested in acting so much as directing, and I started my own improv group when I was at UCLA, and I directed that and also acted in it. So I was always thinking of directing. I directed theater in LA, and I wrote for the Smothers Brothers, and so I was thinking more along those lines. So,
Nick, what about growing up, his son in high school, what were you thinking that you would do? Did you know you were going to go into showbiz, or the opposite, or what?
Well, when I was in high school, the short amount of time that I was there, I didn't think that. But when I started to get messed up on drugs and I had no high school or college education, I was like, okay, show business looks like it's the route.
Need a degree.
Yeah.
To get into
this.
This
is some drug stories.
Now, rehab is really expensive. Do you guys know what people without money do?
Well, no. I mean, some rehab facilities are not expensive, but most of them are. And the people who don't have those resources, you see a lot of people on the streets, and you see people struggling with not only with substances, but usually they're struggling with the underlying mental health issues that caused them to self-medicate. And those people, you know, they do need help. We need to strengthen our mental health facilities and give people, places to go to help them.
Because I know the good places are literally $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a month.
And yeah. Someone asked me the other day, and I thought it was an interesting question. They said, why are there only white people in this rehab? And I was thinking to myself, because when you go to rehabs like that, that's all that you experience. And that's the problem with it, that you know.
A lot of people aren't getting the help.
Yeah, and they're reduced to being, they have to be criminals, called criminals.
But don't you think when you're Donald Trump's vice president, you'll be able to implement a lot of these changes in the country?
Right? Yes, I think we'll have a lot of power at that point.
I will say, and I know we're almost running out of time. Again, the film is called Being Charlie at the Lemley Theaters in Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, and Encino. I will say that I do feel like there has been a sea change in America in recent years with people understanding that people who are addicted to drugs or alcohol, it's a medical thing. It's yes. a physical thing.
Yes.
It's not just they're losers. It's not just they're not trying. It's not just they don't want. You know, we had a conversation earlier this week on the air. We're talking about Lamar Odom. You're familiar with his story,
yes.
guys, right?
Yeah.
And he's drinking again. They're spotting him out everywhere drinking. And you would think, this is a guy who came so close to death a few minutes ago. How can he be drinking? It would be so easy to be on the outside of that situation and go, that guy's just a loser.
Yeah.
But now we're starting to know so much about addiction and know he can't help it. He can't stop it.
And probably for Lamar, he hasn't gotten the kind of help that he needs, which is to work with him as an individual and to focus on his individual problems. I mean, he had a father who was a substance abuser and a heroin addict. And so he has to work on his own personal problems. But you're right. There is a sea change in that it has become Republican and Democrats have come together in understanding that this is an issue that touches everybody.
Right.
And that it cuts across socioeconomic lines. And we are now starting to realize that we don't punish people who have problems. You just don't throw them into jail. You have to help them. And so hopefully there'll be, a lot better effort done on behalf of people who are struggling.
I hope so, too. And don't forget, Lamar had to survive Thanksgiving at the Kardashians, too.
Well, that's... I was going to say that, yeah. Khloe Kardashian's his significant other, I'd be smoking crack, too.
Well, I feel like we've come a long way on this topic, and it's great that a movie like yours can be made. Nick, congratulations on the screenwriting, dude. Seriously, good work. Rob, as always, outstanding directing. And if you ever have the time, we'd love to have you back in another time and talk about all the stuff that we didn't have time for today, because we're all such huge fans of you, Mr. Reiner.
Thank you, Bean.
Time for our final look at the showbiz beat here on a Tuesday morning. What's going on, Mr. Garman?
Tuesday. Changes over there at ESPN. Mike Tirico leaving ESPN for NBC Sports. NBC says he will be involved with football, golf, and as a change of pace, so it's not all sports, soccer. just to mix it up a little bit. He will also help cover the upcoming Summer Olympics. So Tirico's got his plate full already.
That's probably where the soccer comes in, is the Olympics.
Yeah.
Allie, you've got thoughts on all people who do sports on TV.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about Mr. Tirico?
Love him. I think it's a huge, huge problem for ESPN.
Okay.
I think it's awful for them, but it's great for NBC.
One of the big questions for ESPN is what will they do for their Monday Night Football coverage? Well, it's been announced that Sean McDonough will be the new play-by-play announcer alongside, of course, analyst John Gruden and reporter Lisa Salters on the sidelines. So, at least we get the Grudes. That's all I care about. I just want to hear more about Banana ZYX and have them call the plays out and show you exactly what they're doing and make pointless statements. So, could it mean Tirico's heading into the booth for Sunday night and Thursday night football for NBC? Could Al Michaels be on his way out? He is.
That's tough to
71
imagine.
71 years old.
Yeah, but he's still great.
I agree. I love Michaels. But I'm just saying. You got Costas, your lead guy, right, if you're NBC Sports. He's 64. Michaels is 71. Tirico's just 49. So, obviously, they are grooming replacements for their elder statesmen in their sports division.
I totally forgot until you said that NBC is going to have some of the Thursday night games this
boom,
year.
Boom, boom, boom. They will indeed. It's part of their NFL package. They get to carry some of the Thursday night games. I want football back so badly.
Have to wait a few months.
I'm sure, like me, Ralph, you've been following the news out of your mini camp this week, though. I mean, it's getting here. Is there no Eagles minicamp this week? The Seahawks were they're doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we're in OTAs, baby.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's not like there's not at least, you know, signs that the beast is coming back to life here.
The beast.
The beast.
Okay.
Yeah, Sam Bradford's back at camp, which is...
Yeah. Right?
That's the big shocker. Everybody thought he was going to pout.
He did come out and say, I want to be traded, right?
He said that. Yeah. But that usually means for good chemistry with a team.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Usually the less you want to play for a team, the better you play, it turns out. Just ask anyone. Kevin, you don't know.
I don't know.
There's a movie in the works about the life of pro wrestler Andre the Giant. Wish I had thought to ask Mr. Rob Reiner about that when he was in here visiting earlier today. He, of course, cast Andre in his much-beloved role as Fezzik the Giant in Princess Bride. But he was best known, of course, Andre the Giant, as a professional wrestler. Interesting life story. This could make a very cool film. Andre grew up working on his family's farm in France and then was discovered at the age of 17 when he got into professional wrestling in Europe. Then eventually made his way to the States, of course, and became a legend. Who do you cast that was Andre the Giant in a story about his life? All right, Bean. If we get Bean, you put a little weight on Bean, maybe.
A lot of weight on Bean.
But other than that, who do you cast as Andre the Giant?
I go straight Brad Williams.
Oh.
That's my move.
And you make all the sets really right. Tiny, little like doll furniture and stuff and everything. Think how much money you could save. You could shoot it like in a closet. You just put all little tiny furniture in there for the sets, for a little doll furniture, and then you have Brad Williams play Andre the Giant.
Right.
That's a legitimate question, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Bean.
No, but a lot of times...
Thank you for approving of my question.
A lot of times, you know, we're just yakking here. But, I mean, honestly, if you're trying to cast that movie, how do you find someone who's big like that who can also act?
Andre was 7'4" and over 500 pounds.
Who's the NBA player that has
Manute
almost...
Ball.
No.
Oh.
Very
oh,
different. Yeah. Has kind of somewhat
spidery, with spider
similar
arms.
Features, facial features. As Andre the Giant.
Are you thinking of Vlade Divac?
No. No, he's more recent. Like, I've just been hearing about him the last couple years.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Come on, Dave. You know if you're
listening.
I feel
like he's playing right now in the playoffs.
He looks like Andre the Giant.
Similar face.
Lisa Leslie.
No.
Oh,
it's a good guess, though.
I got nothing for you. Sorry. You're asking me to name a basketball player.
Yeah.
That has some facial similarities.
Someone that has a face?
He's got a face, yes.
And
we know that.
And he plays basketball. We'll just move along. I'll
right.
Keep working on that.
Excellent.
Okay.
You break in if you got
all
something
right.
That's valuable.
But don't feel like you have to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Garbage hitting the road this summer. Cannot wait to see them Saturday. As you know, one of my favorite bands ever. Shirley and the guys are set to release a new album. Of course, Strange Little Birds on June 10th, and then their tour will begin July 6th. It kicks off in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then they'll wrap up at least this leg of their summer tour at the Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C. on August 3rd. They're also doing a big outdoor gig at New York City's Central Park, so that would be a cool place to see Garbage at New York in the summertime. But glad Shirley and the gang are having a good time playing their music. They're a great live band.
They are.
If you're not going to Weenie Rose this weekend, you're going to miss out because they are awesome live. Allie, any help?
Yeah, I think he's on the Spurs.
We're narrowing it down to a team.
Okay.
All right, good.
Boban?
Banana fan of nope. Boban. Me, my, mo, man. Boban.
Dave, you watch the NBA
Dave's
Spurs.
Not
he's not
attention.
Listening, Allie. Boban. When will you learn?
Bobby. Bobo.
If I could just insert myself here, no one cares.
Listen, you asked.
Right, but we're finished.
I'm getting word from ex-producer Lightning of the Kevin and Bean Show that his name is Boban Marjanovic.
Sure.
And
boom.
He is apparently a giant.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, he does kind of look like him. He is the tallest. Let's see. He is 7'4".
Hey.
How about that? There you go.
Same height as Andre.
7'4".
Oh, someone sign him to a deal. We need to represent him. We need to manage him.
There's your guy right there.
He's going to cash in. Is
I like
do
it.
You want a peanut? Can you say that?
Not hope.
There you go. Good pull, Allie. Lightning, thank you for the help. Mm-hmm. I think we've just cast Andre the Giant in this film.
Our old producer is listening to the show.
That's nice, right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lightning.
The guy who used to produce the show. He's listening.
Hasn't done it for 10 years, maybe?
Close.
But he's listening.
8? I don't know.
What is Dave
our current producer, Kazoo.
learning to play it.
I guarantee he's got his headphones on and he's watching some stream of a live animal in a park that's asleep.
Oh, there he is.
He's playing his kazoo. Is what he's practicing his kazoo playing. Today's celebrity birthdays. Odette Annibal celebrates her 31st birthday today. From your Anaheim Ducks, Ryan Getzlaff. He's 31 years old. Kenan Thompson from SNL is 38. Bono, 56 years old today. Chris Berman, speaking of ESPN, longtime announcer. He's probably still he's the reigning champ over there, right?
I think
he was with him since the beginning. Mm-hmm. 61 years old. And Young MC.
Next day's function, high class luncheon. Food is served in your stone cold munching. Music comes on, people start to dance. But then you ate so much, you nearly split your pants. A girl starts walking, guys start gawking. Sits down next to you and starts talking. Says she wanna dance cause she likes the groove. So come on, fatso, and just bust the move.
I hear that song.
Just bust the move.
Right, and you think?
And I think, first of all, one of the 10 best songs of my lifetime.
Right.
Of everyone's lifetime.
All right, that's what I heard earlier today.
Right,
second of all, I was thinking, how long has it been since there's been a Kevin Bean party machine? I feel like that needs to happen.
Oh, no, you didn't.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
I need a little bust a move.
Right? Because it's one of the top 10 songs of your lifetime.
Of your lifetime, right.
I was
thinking, say that earlier.
What a sweet gig it is for that chick in that song. Hey, hey. Hey,
pretty
she probably got
game.
Paid the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
That's all she had to do.
That's true.
Young MC's working his ass off in that song.
Not her.
Rhyming yellow and
back.
Fellow. And she's just, That's all she's doing. Women, right, fellas? Who's with me?
I don't think that's what we're saying at all.
Hey, how about that toilet seat, right? We should put that down afterwards.
I don't think we're saying that either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the Showbiz Beat.
Thank you, Ralph. All week long in the 5 o'clock hour, 5 p.m. on K-Rock, we are spotlighting past years of the Weenie Roast. Today, listen to the lineup from the year 2000. Not all of the bands at the year 2000 were good. But,
how dare
wow.
you?
But,
how
way to
dare
sell.
You? 5
way
p.m. on
sell.
K-Rock.
But listen, won't you?
Well, you are like, you're like one of the Ringling Brothers.
It's commercial
what
free.
What a showman.
It's commercial free thanks to a random act of helpfulness from the SoCal helpful Honda dealers.
Why would you add that comment, by
well,
the way?
Well, how does
Limp
that
biscuit.
Help anyone?
Limp Bizkit.
How does it help anyone?
I give
anyone?
You the biscuit.
Okay, but the point is we're playing songs from the year 2000.
That's all you had to say?
It's a time capsule. It's just
right.
fun for people to
is
go
Limp
back.
Is Biscuit one of
it's
the bands in the time capsule?
Maybe.
All right, then. I stand by my...
But let's not poop on the whole hour just because you don't like one song from one band.
I said some.
All right.
I didn't poop on anything, first
you of
all.
Doing
whole
nothing
hour.
For the value for the CBS shareholders, but I'll tell you that much.
Wednesday morning, we have Dana White, the president of the UFC, talking about UFC 198. We have Kevin Bacon on the program tomorrow. And we also have your tickets in the front row for the K-Rock Weenie Roast 2016. That is tomorrow morning.